Right now, if you're scaffing, critting, screeding, HVACing, dunny diving, or electricianing and sparking, then you don't want to be sitting on the side of the road with a work truck that's smoking. You could get an insurance company that includes roadside assistant for when your work truck ain't starting and needs towing. Get on to truckassist.com.au. It's insurance to keep on earning and bacon and egg rolling. Limits and exclusions apply. Consider the PDS and TMD on the Truck Assist website.
This week on Full Credit to the Noise, rumours have Erebus on the market, Perth to get a street race, and Penske add to their rich history. Welcome to Full Credit to the Noise. Well, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Full Credit to the Noise. You can find this podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at FCTTN Podcast. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at former_legend. You can find the bloke across from me on Twitter at AVL_motorsport. He's on Instagram at AVL.motorsport. He's on LinkedIn at AVL.rider.extraordinaire. He's a man who this week used 45 minutes of push to pass to go to the shops. He's designed a Perth street track that coincidentally uses his street as pit straight. And tonight he's wearing his 2024 Olympics breakdancing uniform. Welcome to Speed Cafe's Andrew Van Leeuwen.
I love that intro, former, and I'm very excited about the Serpentine 500 opening the supercar season in 2026. Most of the roads around where I'm from do require dropping two wheels into the dirt when passing someone coming the other way. So I assume it'll be the same when you're passing someone going in the same direction. That's going to make for some very entertaining racing, I think.
You're telling me it's not wide?
Not wide at all.
Well, that's the first box ticked. Let's get Mark Scaife involved. He's going to be very keen. Oh, this is all news to him. This is gold. Mates, what happened this week? Anything big? Anything exciting? I mean, we'll cover off the news. I see you've got some stuff for sale on Instagram.
Oh, my old motorbikes. Yeah, feel free to buy them. Hit me up if you want to, if you fancy something that's, you know, the old leg snappers. If the leg flies out under that back wheel. It all happens pretty quickly.
This has got the vibes of a race team going broke, just selling shit off to try and make the next meeting to me.
You've almost picked it for me, I guess.
On the weekend, I sat around, watched the MotoGP. If you get a chance, have a look at the MotoGP sprint race from Saturday night. Absolute insanity. The last 10 laps seen...
Madness.
It was 6 to 8 Madness. Riders coming down in mostly separate accidents. Danny Pedrosa on a wildcard KTM finished third. Absolute insanity. Marquez dropped it in the lead with 4 to go, which broke a lot of hearts, especially the home crowd. Over in IndyCar, they had massive talking point around their Penske push-to-pass controversy. All three of their drivers had 3 different stories, which is very rough when you go to court and 3 witnesses say 3 different things.
Yep.
Joseph knew nothing. He was the best. He almost was in tears as he spoke to the media for 25 minutes. Sounded like a bloke trying to sell you a Gold Coast timeshare unit, to be fair. By the end of it, I was, didn't know if I was buying or selling or renting. I'll tell you something too, and a bit of a shout out. I watched the Blendline TV coverage of the New South Wales round from Winter, New South Wales State round. Really good. And Blendline don't get enough kudos for what they do. It's a free service. Obviously, it's on YouTube. And you can just, like, it's not world quality, but it's bloody good for what it is. Then I watched the British GT round from a soggy Silverstone. You see how deep I've gone to try and find something to watch over the weekend, AVL.
Yeah.
But maybe the highlight of the weekend, I'm sure you were around this, was the very first Abu Dhabi Autonomous Racing League Grand Prix that took place at the Yas Marina around Abu Dhabi. So basically these are cars without anyone driving them. They're driven by computers. The lead racer, Palamov, spun out on the 4th lap of 8. The second car, Tum, passed it safely, but then shortly after, the events officials threw up a yellow flag, which seemed odd to me. But these are all good AI drivers who obey the rules. So all the other cars just stopped and wouldn't go past the spun-out car, so they had to restart the entire race. It's absolutely something you've got to see. It goes for about an hour, don't watch it all, to do 8 laps around there. But after an hour, the AI race has completed their 8-lap race. If you must know, and I'm sure you are, and I'm sure you had a big bet on Blue Bet, Tum won. So go and get and collect if you you back Tum to win the first autonomous GP. If you're going to watch another one, I recommend not. It's as boring as batshit.
Look, I had didn't follow that at all, so I've got nothing to really add there. I do appreciate you, bro. I was learning stuff then. That was great. The MotoGP race was definitely that sprint race was amazing. Four bikes went down, and they've gone. You know, the commentators have gone. They must have all had a massive shunt together, and then they cut back to just blokes falling off bikes all on their own.
Mate, I heard two different things. I heard there was water seeping through the cracks in the track, and then I heard there was also strong gusts of wind. But to see three top line riders come off in front of each other but not touch was unbelievable.
Yeah, and what was also unbelievable, I don't know if you saw this while you were tuning into the Blend Line coverage, was that that Formula Ford that got ripped in half.
Unbelievable.
The kid drops it at the last corner, smacks the wall, and just pulls the transaxle clean out of it, which was pretty impressive as well.
How many motorbikes is he selling this week, you reckon?
I reckon a few.
All right, let's go to the shift cut. All right, the biggest story to come out of today, and we hinted at it a couple of weeks ago, was there are rumours that Erebus Motorsport is on the market and they're gaining momentum amongst Supercars paddock insiders. Sources have indicated the majority owner, Betty Klemenko, is open to selling the team, something that could happen before the end of the current season. Some have even suggested the negotiations are underway and a deal could be imminent. However, that's hard to verify. By Speed Cafe AVL, give us the lowdown. What is the story?
Yeah, well, I mean, you did kind of hint at this last week in the whisper of the week or whatever it was, and I really wanted to move on to it very quickly, so we didn't give too much away to some of my media colleagues out there. But yeah, look, there's long been chat that Betty wants out at the end of this year. I guess with everything that's gone on, that makes sense. And the last week, the rumor mill has really gone into overdrive about a sale. In fact, as you referenced from the original story, you know, there's those out there that reckon that it's almost done and could be done before Perth. Erebus tells me that's not the case, so we'll see on that one. But either way, you know, all indications are that the team is on the market. That makes sense in a number of ways. I mean, Betty has ticked a lot of boxes now with winning those two titles last year, the Teams Championship and the Drivers' Championship. She obviously already has a Bathurst 1000 win from 2017 with Reynolds and Luke Yulden.
And a 12-hour.
And a 12-hour, yeah. And, you know, as I've said on this pod before, regardless of where the blame lies for this Erebus Kostecki saga, it would not have been easy for anybody to go through. So wanting out is a pretty understandable conclusion for someone like Betty to reach, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Talk to me about prospective buyers. I mean, the ones that came to mind, obviously on social media, it's heated up straight away. I don't see it, but they're talking Adderton. I'll bet a dollar to a thousand that says he doesn't buy it.
I don't think they would sell it to Peter Ritson, personally. I don't think there's a number big enough that would happen if I had.
Everyone's got a price, ABL. Everyone's got a price.
Yeah, it's true. You think Betty Klemenko's might be slightly higher than yours or mine, in all the talk that there's been in the last week, it hasn't been about him buying the team. I'm not saying that's 100% not going to happen, but I feel that it's unlikely and it hasn't been as part of the chats. Mm-hmm. In terms of if there is someone on the hook right now, there's some theories, but none that I'm confident enough to sort of peddle into a public forum right at this moment.
Not going to talk about you selling your bikes and trying to fund this thing or...
you never know. You never know.
As we also hit it on this podcast last week or the week before, Perth has emerged as a contender to host a new street race amongst the Supercars calendar. Speed Cafe has learned of extremely preliminary talks amongst the West Australian state government and Supercars regarding more investment into the annual Western Australia round. This isn't the first time there's been talk of a Perth street race, with a number of plans, including layouts in the CBD and Fremantle, being floated over the past two decades. Are you excited?
I think I am. Yeah, this was another nice little breaking news story. Cafe on Friday. As you said, there's been a lot of chat over the years about a Perth street race. It had gone quiet for a few years, but now it's back and it's definitely a thing, albeit discussions are still very much in their infancy. Basically, WA wants more events and the government built up its war chest in terms of tourism and events, war chest, to have a crack at Gather Round and a few other footy-related things that haven't come off. Supercars has seen that as an opportunity to ask some questions about a bigger spend on the Perth round from the state government. That could be upgrades such as permanent lights at Wanneroo. Apparently, the last Perth Supernight did pretty good business for Supercars in terms of East Coast TV numbers, which I actually find kind of weird because of the time difference. Like, it's the one place that a night race really shouldn't work because it doesn't. It sort of starts to become a midnight race at some point with a two-hour time difference. But anyway, yeah, the big ticket item, as is always the case with supercars, would be a street race. It seems that Optus Stadium is the preferred centerpiece for that. It all fits into supercars' plans, you know, the plans that that Barclay Nettlefold outlined to teams and drivers at the AGP, which is another street race in the next couple of years, an interstate street race, as in, you know, away from the big markets that already have the big events. And, you know, it gives supercars a nice viable option as a season opener as well. So it's not on the cards for next season, but certainly for 2026.
What's the brewery down there that we both like?
That was Gage Roads.
Yes, yeah, that's where we needed to run past that if we could, please. Thank you.
Yeah, at least put the media centre in there. That would
Would that be?
That would be a start. I think it's funny. There's always lots of opinions on things like this, particularly when street races take a round away from a permanent circuit. You know, is it a good idea? In this case, I think it actually probably could be. You know, I think that, you know, Perth is the sort of place that could definitely do with more big events and would very potentially embrace something like this. The WA Sporting Car Club doesn't run the Perth Supercars round anymore. It just cops an urn for hiring the track to Supercars, which then runs the event in conjunction with the state government. So it wouldn't have any massive impact on the Sporting Car Club or on carco.com.au raceway/Wanneroo Raceway. And, you know, maybe this is the sort of market where an event like this could really fly.
Yeah, I'm hoping it gets up, mate, to be honest. That'd be nice. Next story, Dale Wood will join Grove Racing for the Enduros in 2024. Grove has an unexpected vacancy in its lineup after a date change for the Penrite Oil Sandown 500 created a clash for Kevin Estre. The Frenchman had paired up with Matt Payne in 23, but Speed Cafe expects Wood to co-drive the 26 Mustang with Richie Stanaway. Garth Tander will shift across to Car 19, having mentored Payne since he arrived at Grove last year. It's a victory for blokes with ordinary rigs, isn't it?
That's look. This all makes plenty of sense, really. Garth and Matt are a perfect fit height wise. Not that that's an issue in the Gen 3 era to the extent that it was before, but you know, and they've also got that mentorship relationship. So it's and Matt's going pretty good, and you're pairing up with Garth, and that's actually a pretty
strong,
pretty decent Bathurst 1000 lineup. I'll tell you right now. As for signing Dale Wood, it's such a right field thing for the Groves to do. Like, they tend to march to the beat of their own drum a little bit and grabbing guys like Matty Campbell and Kevin Estre. So to sign an experienced race fit co-driver like Dale seems kind of normal, like weirdly normal for the Groves to do. That was my first thought when, you know, someone put this theory to me last week that this is what was happening. I was like, wow, that's a, you know, that makes sense, but it also almost makes too much sense because the Groves just have this kind of different way of doing things. And this is a very, like, solid choice of a co-driver.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say against this, and I like Dale Wood and I like the way he goes about his business, he's a tough, hard racer. He can find bad luck at Bathurst, man. He has had some shockers. Yep. That would be my only worry. But I think it's good news for one of the good guys. So, all right, the biggest story to come from overseas, or at least from America this weekend, was Roger Penske's team. Don't forget, Roger owns IndyCar, and he fields a team of three drivers. One of those is Scotty McLaughlin, the other one's Will Power, and then you've got Joseph Knows Nothing. Two of his drivers have been retroactively disqualified from this year's opener that was about 2 months ago. IndyCar has found that Penske was in possession of software which allowed it to bypass the championship's own race control system's ability to turn the push-to-pass system on and off, meaning the team could use it whenever it pleased. This advantage appeared to help Newgarden recover from fourth to the lead after a slow pit stop, while McLaughlin jumped from ninth to sixth on the first lap, but it's unclear at this point whether the latter used the push to pass at that point. The New Zealander later put out a statement claiming he pushed the button out of habit and did not gain an advantage from it. Don't forget, between 150 and 200 seconds of extra power per race is available on the push to pass system. tell me about this. This is, it stinks. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, it's a weird one, particularly with Scotty Mac basically hurling Newgarden under the bus after Newgarden said he thought the rules had changed and they were allowed to use the push to pass. And Scotty sort of went, well, that's I definitely didn't think that.
Did you see Scotty said, it's just a force of habit, I pushed the button. If that's the case, then Scotty must run out of push to pass quite often with laps to go if he's just pushing it out of habit.
Yeah, that is definitely a strange explanation as well. Look, I'm not an IndyCar expert and I'm not an engine software expert, but this whole thing definitely smells a bit fishy to me too, to be honest. And I think the reaction from the rivals says a lot. You know, Team Penske did effectively own up to what happened in St. Pete after being busted in Long Beach. Like, they came to IndyCar and said, hey, this actually happened in St. Pete as well. But it didn't really have a choice once the cat was out of the bag, and probably being seen to admit to it was a smarter play to try and salvage reputations than hope that, you know, IndyCar didn't do any more digging, which they were definitely going to do once they'd fallen into this understanding that the team had this available to them. And, you know, it's like when we talk about TCR protests and, you know, technical issues in Trans Am and stuff with GRM, you know, this is Roger owns the series.
Yeah.
So it makes a bad look even worse, really.
I agree. So, I totally agree.
That's really what it is. It's definitely, it's fishy. There's no doubt about it.
I tell you what, I fell down a rabbit hole too, and I'm just saying, I put in Google search Penske caught cheating, and there's a number of incidents over the last, let's just say, 30 to 40 years. This is not an outlier. This is not a one-off. Whether it was a mistake or not, and that's what they're going to run with, that's fine. But I tell you what, in the entire field almost as one have stood and said, nah, man, I don't believe it. Scotty Dixon was quite outspoken.
Yeah.
Pat O'Ward had another crack at him. Zach Brown's now weighed in as well. I mean, if it smells like if it smells like poo and tastes like poo, it's poo.
Yeah.
In my experience. Let's talk about Aussies and Kiwis overseas. Back to the IndyCar. Scotty McLaughlin did win that race, which probably felt a little bit awkward at some stages. Will Power was second. Marcus Armstrong finished ninth, and Scotty Dixon ran 15th. Scotty McLaughlin admits he was left angry when he thought a mannequin which fell onto the Barber Motorsports Park track had ruined his race. Did you see this? One of the strangest things you'll ever see. A mannequin fell off a bridge.
Yep. Very weird.
Very strange. Yeah. Yep. I thought someone threw it off. I thought, geez, that's a bit dicey, but no, it's just fallen off the bridge. Shane Van Gisbergen ran 18th in the Xfinity Series in the Bendover Speedway race. In MotoGP, Jack the Mood Killer Miller crashed in the sprint race and also in the main race to show that he is consistent, if nothing else. And I just want to touch on Jet Lawrence, who won the Philadelphia round of the AMA Supercross with a lights to flag win. He now has a 12-point lead with two rounds to go. In the qualifying heat, he fell off and was dead last. He has to run ninth, otherwise he has to get through the last chance qualifier. Not only did he run fifth, he was catching the leaders, and then he went on in the final to absolutely hose them. So that was awesome to see.
You do love your Jet Lawrence.
Oh, and his brother went pretty good too. I think he ran about fifth. Red Bull Racing has denied reports that star designer Adrian Newey is set to quit the team. First reported in the German press, it was claimed that Newey would leave the all-conquering Formula One team because of the handling of accusations around Christian Horner. According to a couple of the websites over there, actually, and BBC, Newey has grown unhappy with the internal power struggle within Red Bull and wants out. AVL, of all the people to lose.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want this one to go.
Yeah. I think you were trying to say auto, motor, und sport before.
What I was trying to say?
I think so. They were the first to report it, but obviously picked up by Motorsport Network and all the big guys in the F1 world. It does appear that I think retirement is on the cards for Adrian Newey, at least from the F1 side of things at Red Bull. There's a lot of chat about contract issues complicating a move to another team, but there is too much smoke for there to be no fire at all. So I reckon that it's very feasible that we could see him hang up his little designing pen.
Yeah, which would be kind of a shame. I mean, it's got to the point now where you've got to say, if I'm Red Bull management, I'm going to say to Horner, thanks for your time, but jog on. Because there's a chance that if Newey goes, so will Max. it's not going to be great. I can't see why they just wouldn't say to Horney, you've got to go, mate, unfortunately. Whether you've been beaten by politics or not, this is just the way it is. And then if Newey does lob somewhere, wouldn't you love to see him at Audi when he lobbed over at a newer team and helped them along the way? But, let's see. Like you say, there's talk around him having a contract until 27. He's got to do a bunch of gardening leave before he can go and work somewhere else. So, all right, Formula One driver Nico Hülkenberg has signed for Kick Sauber on a multi-year deal, with the German star confirming he will leave Haas at the end of the year. The 36-year-old veteran, who joined Haas at the start of last year, will return to the team he previously represented in 2013. In 2026, when F1's sweeping new regs are introduced, German manufacturer Audi will take over from the Kick Sauber-run F1 team that currently operates under the Stake moniker. AVL 36, 37, 38. It's tough to be a young bloke trying to get into Formula One at the moment.
Yeah, it's an interesting signing, I guess. I don't know. I think there's a real, you know what you're getting and it'll be fine, but won't blow your socks off.
Yeah, good call. But then they've got that anyway, haven't they? Bottas will give them that.
Yeah. Yeah, look, surely there's something bigger in the works for the other seat, at least for 2026 when Audi rolls in. I can't imagine.
They're talking, obviously, it's Carlos.
Yeah, I can't imagine you look at this and go, this is the guy that's going to deliver the sort of results that a car maker like Audi wants in Formula One. Again, you know, like, not saying Hulk's not a good Formula One driver, but you know what you're going to get, and it's going to be
fine. Yeah, exactly right. It's a safe, bland, vanilla sort of choice.
Yeah.
The Formula One Commission has decided that any change to awarding World Championship points needs further analysis. A meeting of key F1 body people on Thursday discussed a proposal to increase the number of point scoring positions from 10 to 12. It's argued that without points, there is little incentive for those down the order to engage in battle on track. What do you think of this?
I mean, I think Yuki running D-Rick off the road on the cooldown lap because he missed out on 14th or whatever it was in Bahrain suggests that drivers do actually care about positions.
It's a good call.
Whether points are on the line or not. I don't like this. I think scoring points in the World Championship should be hard.
I agree.
10 is a good number. 6 made it a bit too hard when it was just 6 points paying positions. But, you know, 10 is the right balance, and I wouldn't be messing with it personally.
This has a real sort of everyone gets a prize feel.
Well, you may as well just go down the path of, you know, like they do in supercars, which is, just giving everyone points for making the finish.
Which I don't like either. When it was 6 points, 6 places, tough to get a point in that sort of environment. So maybe we don't want to go back to that. I actually wouldn't mind seeing it, to be honest. But, 12 is a little bit ridiculous. That's half the field going to be showered in points.
Yeah.
Finally, I know on behalf of both of us, Shane Van Gisbergen paid a subtle tribute to his late mother during the past two outings in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Shane's mum, Karen Wallace, passed away in New Zealand on April 15. She was aged 64. The Supercars champion turned NASCAR star celebrated her life by running the name Wallace on the door of his cars in Talladega and Dover. And he posted on social media today, "It's been a pretty tough couple of weeks here with my mum passing away back home. From everyone here, we just want to say vale to Karen and Shane, keep your chin up, mate. It must be horrible being that far away and having to deal with that."
Yeah, very sad news, and a lovely tribute from Shane with the name on the door the last couple of weeks. You know, it really shows how mentally strong professional athletes are, you know, to be able to perform on such a huge public stage with all that happening in the background is quite amazing. So absolutely condolences to the Van Gisbergen family, and that's just what a tough thing for Shane to deal with, and he's dealing with it, you know, with a great amount of dignity, which is what you'd expect from him. Full credit
to the noise. Right now, if you're scaffing, critting, screeding, HVACing, dunny diving, or electrician and sparking, then you don't want to be sitting on the side of the road with a work truck that's smoking. You could get an insurance company that includes roadside assistant for when your work truck ain't starting and needs towing. Get onto truckassist.com.au. It's insurance to keep on earning and bacon and egg rolling. Limits and exclusions apply. Consider the PDS and TMD on the Truck Assist website.
All right, welcome back to Full Credit to the Noise. Now, I thought we'd do credit or shred it this week. I'm going to make a few statements. Ooh, you just simply tell me, AVO, whether you think the statement has some credit or we should shred it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be honest and upfront and say there's a couple here that might sort of have you sort of thinking. Especially about your profession. All right, let's talk about Super 2. This is the statement. Super 2 should turn back the clock and have at least three standalone rounds like they did in the late 2000s and have three rounds with the top series at the big profile glamour events. Credit or shred it?
Shred it. The series costs so much money now. Yeah, the series costs so much money and the TV time and eyeballs are critical to young drivers trying to find the backing to do it. So it's too good a support category as well. So, you know, if they could control costs a little bit, it'd be nice if there was a couple of more appearances at more supercars events rather than just that, you know, what is it, six rounds or whatever. But it really is just the big ticket events, really. I mean, obviously Perth is a bit of an outlier, but, you know, when we're talking about Townsville and Bathurst and season opener, season finale, and, you know, it kind of is exactly that. It's just probably not quite enough rounds. Like the bigger buck, it's a ropey old series. You're not getting a lot of laps for your big old spend. You know, close to $1 million if you want to be anywhere close to winning.
Do you think they have enough gravitas to be able to pull off their own rounds?
Nah, who's going to go?
You're
not going to get, but you're not going to get anything like a decent crowd.
I think you're underselling a lot of fans who feel shortchanged at the moment, mate, with only 12 rounds, some of them only one in their state. You know, I think a lot of people would probably jump on this if it happened. That's all I'm going to say. If it was a decent enough sort of supports as well, I mean, back in the day, they had the utes that would follow them around as well, the Super 2s. And give them a little bit more, you know, of some drawing power. But I get it. I'd like to see it, to be honest. I'd even like to see if he took it out to eight rounds. I know it's all about money. Took it out eight rounds and had three of their own standalones. That would be awesome as well. All right. The Supercars TV team should be shaken up with only Crompton and Tander surviving because its current lineup is past its use-by date. It's time for a new lineup with new voices and less agendas. Credit or shred it?
It's a common sentiment out there in both the paddock and among punters, so it definitely has credit. And that's not an opinion on agendas or whatever. It's not an opinion on who should stay and who should go. I think there is an appetite out there for a change at some point, and that point, you know, I think there's an appetite for that point to not be in the too distant future as well.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of credit, to be honest. I think speaking to a lot of people, I think there is a genuine consensus that this wouldn't be a bad thing. Let's just say that. I think Neil is kind of like the elder statesman in rugby league terms. He's probably the Ray Warren of the series. In AFL terms, probably the Dennis Cometti. He could probably do it until he wants to stop himself. Tander's a great addition, but the rest, yeah, can take or leave, to be honest. All right, what about this? Australia should be working hard to get a WEC round, even if it's at Tail and Bend.
Look, I'm not a huge sports car guy, so I'm not overly sold on this. You can shred this one for mine.
No, I love it. I love it. I mean, ideally, I would like it not to be at Tail and Bend, only because of accommodation issues. If there was a sort of a big, I mean, they did one race around Adelaide Street Circuit in this kind of series a long, long time ago. If they could do something like that, that would be sensational. But I'd love to see them down here. Those things are enormous, and they're getting a lot more factory support. I'd like to see it. What about this? Motorsport journalists are more concerned about relationships with teams and drivers than they are about telling the whole story. That has been something that's come through on a lot of messages I've received in the last couple of weeks.
It's quite a refreshing take, to be honest, because we're usually accused of caring about clicks and nothing else. Mm. You know, like who cares about the truth or about this or that? It's all about clicks, which is obviously not the case. Look, this is obviously one that's centered on the whole Kostecki thing, and I can see how that whole situation, which has been incredibly frustrating for fans, has led to a conclusion like this. I'm very comfortable with my journalistic principles. I think I've shown on plenty of occasions that I'm not scared of breaking news. At the same time, you can't do this job well without having good personal and professional relationships with the right people in the paddock. You know, I think this whole Brody thing has badly exposed those in the media that are either disliked or basically unknown to people in the paddock, because they're the ones that have swung between barracking against journalism and generally being horribly misinformed and taking those misinformed opinions to the public, which is quite embarrassing. But they're the ones who don't have the relationships, that can't support the relationships to actually get to the bottom of what's going on. Obviously, you know, we haven't been able to say everything that we all know about some things that are going on. That's not just about protecting relationships or fostering relationships. That can be, there's can be legal implications and all sorts of other factors that affect that as well. At the end of the day, it is a balancing act. But, you know, I'll shred this statement because fostering relationships, it isn't about making friendship bracelets and braiding each other's hair, you know. Like, it's about A, being a good person, and B, being a good journalist. You have to be able to do that if you want to do this job properly.
Yeah. Look, I get it, mate. And being able to see you do your apply your craft over the last, especially the last sort of 3 or 4 months when this particular story was blowing up, I've seen what you've had to sort of navigate your way through. Not that I'm making any sort of apologies for anyone like that, because again, you sort of do hear this this opinion bounce around social media and that sort of thing and everything else, and I get it too, because there are some times where you just think, I just want to know. And I think that's human nature a lot of the time. In other sports, I see journalists not give two hoots whose toes they tread on. That's probably the ball sports especially. I see journos really run the ball hard, especially in rugby league. Maybe not so much in AFL, but they've got their own reasons for that. So I think this has credit, this statement, but I understand that it's not just an A or a B choice here. This is a real complex argument. So
yeah, it definitely is. And it's, you know, other sports have better robustness when it comes to dealing with the media. The people involved have a better understanding of the media. There are a lot of people out there that, honestly, the sentiment that, you know, we don't go hard enough on teams and drivers is probably, you know, it is actually probably right. Yet there's people inside teams and there's people inside supercars that think we're the devil and we're purposely out to get everyone, which is mind-blowing, like, mate, absolutely mind-blowing. But you know, there's a lot of things that that I would like to sometimes take the people involved in our sport and be able to implant them into a footy world for a day.
Oh my God.
And just go, here's what it's like to be in a really popular sport, mate. Like, here's what it's like to be in the fishbowl of genuine superstardom. You know, like, have a go at this for a while and then come back and be upset about me for trying to do my job.
Correct. And look, from a rugby league perspective, I know of instances where media outlets have planted two photographers within Bulls Roar, one of them up a tree to get photos of a team on a Mad Monday on a drink, you know. They know what they're looking for. That's when you think it's gone too far, and that really is starting to tread on some toes. But they don't care. That's the thing. And I don't think some in motorsport actually understand how good they've got it, if that's fair.
I agree. I totally agree.
All right, this one, it's quite pertinent for the last couple of the last week or so. In racing, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Teams should. This is, for some reason, when I just heard you say that, it made me think of one of my favourite sayings that wouldn't have come from Reynolds, but he was the one who told me, which is, you know, everyone behind me is shit and everyone in front of me is cheating.
Yeah.
Which is just a great summation of motorsport.
Yeah.
Look, I think teams should definitely be pushing the limits. Same as drivers. Like, if you're passing someone, damn right, you should be hanging them out to dry as much as the rules allow so they don't come back at you three corners later.
Yeah, like, I don't think that's the same as...
That's just smart driving. The real good guys walk that line really well, and I think the good teams know exactly how they can know exactly what they can get away with. Now, it is different to blatantly cheating, but I think working very hard to ensure that you can get an edge is something that, or if there is an edge there, you can make sure you're exploiting it in the same way that, like, and Triple Eight have always been the masters of this as well. You know, they were the ones that looked at the rookie rules and went, we can go test a whole bunch of different tracks here.
Yeah,
and straight away did it. And all the other teams went, well, hang on a minute, that's not what the rule means. And they went, that's what it says. Like, just not like, it's not our fault that you weren't thinking creatively enough about what the wording of this thing is, but we ain't breaking any rules here. So that's the sort of stuff that pushing the boundaries of what's acceptable, that's what the real good guys do.
Yep. Two things I've heard. One's from the NASCAR world, and it was they say, if you get caught, it's cheating. If you don't get caught, it's engineering. I quite like that. That's very clever. And another one I was talking to team boss, I won't even say which series was in, but he said, I know the team that won today is cheating. And I said, oh, yeah, really, how's that? And he said, because we're cheating and we didn't beat them.
Yeah,
so, exactly. Yeah, look, I think it's just part of the game, right? You run it to the line. Sometimes you run over the line. If you get caught, then you cop it on the chin, or sometimes you don't, Joseph Newgarden especially, and you move on. What about this? I find this interesting, and I know you're not a sports car guy, but in GT3, a Mustang beating a McLaren or a Ferrari or a Lamborghini makes a mockery of the series and will lessen the attractiveness to exotic car makers to enter the series moving forward.
I'm going to shred it. It's a long-standing theory. It was often it's often been used about supercars.
I've heard
luxury
it, yeah.
manufacturers not wanting their M4s and their AMGs being towed up by Commodores, you know, but I reckon it's complete bullshit. Like, if you're watching a GT3 race and going, wow, I never knew a Ford Mustang was faster than a Ferrari.
You're a dum-dum.
Then you're probably not smart enough to make enough money to buy either of them. So I don't really think you're affecting the sales of luxury cars if you honestly are sitting there watching it going, oh, what a revelation. You know, this $60,000 car can beat this $500,000 car. That's, I think it's a silly theory.
I remember when the Nissan won the 12-hour at Bathurst, I heard people say, it's not fair, it's four-wheel drive. And it's like, it doesn't matter here, whatever. I think it's an interesting theory. I'd love to hear from someone in those camps, McLaren, Ferrari or Lambo, what they think of it, just to see. But then you find middle ground, like the new Corvette's probably going to go into has gone into GT3 as well. Do they think that's also a kick in the guts? I think that thing's a jet. It looks good on the road as well. So, look, I think you race what's in front of you. And so I'd say shred it as well. Righto, finally, Max and Red Bull winning most races in Formula 1 is bad for business, and Formula 1 should explore ways to nobble the bulls before viewer numbers drop even more than they have recently.
Nah, shred it. I was at the Grand Prix. I don't buy the waning interest thing. Would closer racing be good for F1? Yes, but... Mm. I'm not buying. I think F1's popularity will certainly wane at some point, but I'm not buying that it's something that's rapidly happening in front of our eyes just because a bloke's winning a bunch of races.
I'm just about to say that Red Bull are about to nobble themselves by letting Newey go, so it'll be fine soon anyway. Don't worry about it. But yeah, look, I don't think Red Bull are doing anything wrong to be nobbled. It's not like they've introduced some crazy, diffuser system or something where you can say, well, that's just not fair. They're just doing a better job and others aren't. So I don't think you should be punished just because you do a good job.
No, not at all.
All right, we'll come back after the break for Rear of Grid and the Mum's Life Challenge. This episode of Full Credit of the Noise is brought to you by Supercar's newest team, Team Sydney. Supported by Supercars and the New South Wales government, Team Sydney is finally giving every motorsport fan in Australia's biggest city their own team to cheer for. And much like a Western Sydney pub on a Friday arvo, our cars will be hard to miss as they hit the track in safety vest yellow. And look, never mind that Boost boss Pete Adderton described us as a national embarrassment to the sport, Team Sydney is a gun squad with a big future, and you just know that Sydney's very own team will be here for years to come. Team Sydney, that's the dump. It's not coming from our shed. Full credit to the noise. All right, welcome back to the final segment, Rear of Grid, for this episode. Aviola clawed a little bit back on the Mum's Life Challenge last week. I'm quite happy with that one. This week, not so confident. For those who haven't heard this before, I'm going to make a statement. Aviola's going to tell me, is it a lie or is it fact? If he gets it right, he gets one to his scoreboard. If he doesn't, I get one. At the moment, it's 7-5. And whoever loses has to put a hashtag Mum's Life sticker on their car for the entirety of next year. Maybe their race car. All right. You ready?
I'm ready.
Race car numbers in Formula 1 are an interesting topic. Car number 1 has won 215 times in Formula 1 in history. Car number 5 has won 144 times with Mansell, Vettel and Schumacher. One you'd expect because of the reigning champ and things like that used to traditionally be what number 1 was. Car number 2 is 3rd with 83 wins. Car number 44, which is actually Hamilton's number, 82 wins, and he's got 81 of those. It's quite impressive. Oddly, The number one hasn't been used on an F1 car for a full Formula One season since November 2014. This is the longest the sport has gone without running the fabled number. Because obviously they opened up to people can use their own numbers, and now basically no one chooses to run the one when they win the championship, or Max doesn't anyway. But maybe more interesting are the numbers that are banned from being used in Formula One. Unbelievably, number 13 is banned from being issued due to the superstition of it being unlucky that went back into the 60s. Car number 17 can't be used as it was retired after Jules Bellitte Bianchi's death. He used that number his entire career in Formula One. And since Liberty took ownership of the series, they are rumoured to be quietly planning to block any team or driver that wants to run the number 69 for obvious reasons. True or false?
I reckon that's false.
8-5. That stinks. The 17's true. The 13 isn't, and 69 isn't.
Yeah.
13 hasn't been used for ages, and then Maldonado used it. Not sure he should have, to be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of teams steered clear of 13, believe it or not, because they were superstitious about it.
I was trying to think of like what, because you know when they were told what numbers they were running. You know, you were issued your numbers based on your constructor championship. What team? I think there was a provision to avoid 13.
There was. Absolutely, there was.
I think there was a provision for that. I was just trying to. That's what I was sort of going through my head, going, "Hang on, what did they used to do there?" Because it wasn't that long ago that, you didn't get to pick your number.
That's right.
You know, it was depended where you finished in the constructors championship, and it was car 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and so on and so forth. So.
All right, my whisper of the week. Been on fire. How's this? The word is that upper management at one particular supercar team have been put on notice with changes expected if results aren't improved soon. Mm. Do you want to add anything to that?
No. Not at all. All right. Not at all. Too many relationships to protect, my friend.
Typical of you journos. The fan letter of the week. Don't forget, you can message us on all the socials. You can at FCTTN podcast, Insta, Twitter, or Facebook. And it comes from Ben Pugsley, who's written in before, and he says, AVL, more than former, I take that personally, why are BJR so awesome at the pit stops? They seem to win the pit stop challenge every year and beat some of the bigger teams.
They are ridiculously successful at the pit stop challenge. And I guess it's just an effort thing. They have a proper pit stop car. I think it's an AU Falcon, actually. And it's obviously just something that they put a lot of time and effort into getting right, you know? And I guess, you know, it's definitely an easy place to win a little bit of time, particularly in our sprint races with no fuel where, you know, it is all about the tyre stop. And if we start going further away from getting rid of the fuel drop, then, you know, it actually makes the stops in the refueling races, you know, more time critical as well. So I really think that it comes down to just, you know, what the effort goes into, and they put a lot of effort into it, and it shows when they have that sort of stage to show it on, like the pit stop challenge.
Someone commented unfairly under Ben Pugsley's question, saying that they're also very good at panel beating, but I thought I'd let that one go. That'll do us for this episode of Full Credit the Noise. Don't forget, you can find this show on all the socials at FCTTN Podcast. You can read AVL's excellent work at speedcafe.com, where you can read all the big breaking news. Head over to there. Until next time, I've been former legend. He's been AVL. This has been Full Credit the Noise, and I'm going to the sticker shop to make a hashtag Mum's Life sticker. Just get on with it.
Good idea. See ya. Full Credit to the Noise.